This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. And for the Longhorns, it's the ball was saying it's going through the net. Most recently in a game against Grand Canyon at home on Saturday. I'm Dustin McComas. You're listening to the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. And of course, I go this past weekend, I drive about 5 hours, mostly north and a lot east, out to Mount Pleasant in Sims, Texas for a wedding of a long time friend. And it's the first home basketball game I've missed. It's been a long time. I can't remember the last one I've missed. And I left the assignment to Jeff Ketchum to, hey, you got to handle the post-game thoughts from this one, because we haven't really known what to expect from this Texas team. And I'm kind of following along the score briefly when I can get some Wi-Fi while dinner was going on. And I'm looking at the halftime score like, what in the heck is going on? And turns out all Texas needed was for me not to show up to a home game, and then they would score 98 points. I was taken aback when I saw the score, because Grand Canyon's not a bad basketball team. They're basically, if you go by the overall analytics, strength of team, whatever, the KenPom rankings, they're very similar to Radford. The spread for those games, I believe, was identical. I think Texas was -10.5 for Radford. It was -10 for Grand Canyon. So according to the odds makers, who are far smarter than you and I when it comes to this thing, Radford and Grand Canyon are basically the same type of team in terms of strength. And yet Texas beat one 98-60, and it lost to the other one and couldn't even score. Did they even break 60 that game? I've got to go back. No, they didn't. They lost 62-59. So they almost hit their point total at halftime for for what they did in the entire game against Radford. So we'll talk a lot about that game. I think that I've gone through and during lunch at home, I was often make my lunch at home and rewatch some games that I have on the DVR, rewatching this Texas game for the second time. A lot of things really caught my attention. A lot of things, even though they were small things, it was just that a lot of small things Texas was doing well. And it's a lot of things that it's talked about wanting to do well. So we'll get into a lot of Grand Canyon discussion. We'll look ahead to the Providence game coming up this Friday at 8 p.m. At the Irwin Center, another home game for Texas, before it then wraps up its non-conference play, well, at least until the Big 12 SEC Challenge, wraps up its non-conference play a week later on Friday, December 28th, with a home game against UT Arlington before they get to the Big 12 play with Kansas State. And speaking of Kansas State, some news came out about Kansas State recently about its star forward, Dean Wade. Anybody that's followed Big 12 basketball or followed college basketball last year knows that Dean Wade, one of the best players in the Big 12, one of the better big guys in the country. Bruce Weber said today, according to Kellis Robinette, I think he's a beat reporter that covers Kansas State. He said Bruce Weber says today that Dean Wade suffered a small tear in a tendon in his foot. Could be out just for a few weeks, could be out for a lot of weeks. Not sure the timetable of his return, but he does think Wade will play again this season. That's obviously an enormous blow to Kansas State, but that's who Texas opens Big 12 play with. I know we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here. Texas still has two home games remaining before they get into conference play. But Texas opens Big 12 play with at Kansas State. Obviously, that's going to be a tough game no matter what. This is a quality Kansas State team that returned a lot of players, a lot of talent, a lot of players, a lot of experience from that Elite Eight team last season. So that's going to be a tough game no matter what. But Dean Wade, that's a big blow. You're talking about, according to the KenPom numbers, the best offensive rating, like basically individual offensive performance of the year, Really good percentages shooting-wise. Really good rebounding percentages. He's even moving the ball around and assisting on a lot of makes. He leads Kansas State in assist percentage despite being a 6'10 big guy. Shooting really well at the free throw line. Hasn't shot a ton of threes this year, but was shooting a quality percentage there. This has probably been their best player. You look at what they have beyond him at the big spot, and there's not a lot there. I mean, it looks like they like to play Xavier Sneed a lot as a small ball four. Other than that, there's not a lot of depth in their front court beyond McCole Mawine, who's playing about 48% of the team's minutes. So he's basically their main big guy off the bench, and that's about it, besides a couple of other guys that get in there occasionally. That's a big blow, and that's the type of thing that could dramatically alter, you know, how the Big 12 could play out, because you look at the analytics and the numbers and the projections at KenPom.com. Basically, Kansas is the clear best team, although Texas Tech is right in there, because Texas Tech, as of right now, is the number one adjusted defensive efficiency team in the country. If you watch them, you can see why. Man, they got a bunch of veterans that know how to flat out defend. And Chris Beard deserves a ton of credit for that. He's done a good job with all that roster turnover. They haven't really played that much of a schedule. They'll get tested big time coming up this week against Duke. They did pound Nebraska on a neutral site, quality team. USC, the Big 12 has taken its turns beating USC and beating USC pretty handily. So I don't really know what to make of that win. USC has just been a mess, especially without Kevin Porter. And then beyond that, Texas Tech to this point has played the number 349 schedule in the country. So they've already played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams at home that are ranked 300 or worse in the KenPom rankings. On one hand, you've got that impressive Nebraska win and then handling USC with ease. On another hand, haven't really been tested. So we'll see what happens when they play Duke on a neutral floor. Then they play UT Rio Grande Valley, and then they get into the Big 12 slate. But according to based on the performance thus far, much of that factored against the opponent as well. They're up to number 10 overall in the KenPom ranking. So those two look like, at least according to the numbers, the two best teams in the league right now. And then beyond that, you've got Iowa State at 20, Kansas State at 23, TCU at 26, Oklahoma at 30, Texas at 31, West Virginia at 40. You've basically got most of the league together at the same tier or type of team. And if you look at these numbers in terms of the overall ratings of teams, there's not really that much that separates many of them. I mean, Oklahoma and Texas are separated. I mean, Oklahoma is 16.67 in an adjusted efficiency, I guess, just the overall adjusted efficiency that makes the overall rating. Texas is 16.66. So Texas is basically identical to Oklahoma. You look at Iowa State, who is at 20, and there's only about 2 points, a little over 2 points, that separates Iowa State and Texas. But, you know, you look at the Big 12, there's 1, 2, 3 teams between Iowa State and Texas. So basically, there's a whole tier of teams in there that it's going to create a lot of close games again. It's going to create a brutal grind of a schedule again for everybody in the league. And an injury like a Dean Wade to Kansas State, depending on when he comes back, is he the same guy? How long is he out? That's the kind of thing that could dramatically shift how that tier structures itself as the season goes on. So we'll get into Big 12 play eventually. We still got some time before that. I believe Texas opens up Big 12 play January 2nd at Kansas State. But going back to this Grand Canyon game, again, you're listening to the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McCombs of OrangeBloods.com. And sorry in advance, I'm going to be drinking a lot of water this episode. The wind and everything is just, I think it's blowing around all these damn allergies and crap that's making me stuffy and sound like a mess. So the Grand Canyon game. Not as simple as just saying Texas made shots. While shot making can go a long way in determining how an offense looks, you know, shot making can cover up a lot of things. You can have guys that make bad shots one night and you're like, oh, you know, they had a good offensive output. Well, that's not really sustainable if you've got some guys making a lot of bad shots. And I think there have been moments earlier this season where Texas had some guys making some tough shots that might have made some things look better than they were. And then Radford and VCU happened, and it's like, whoa, what's going on? So we started to see against Purdue some signs of this, and we saw it again in the Grand Canyon game. Shot making is one thing, but shot making is also a product of all these other small things that go into the quality of shot that is generated and how a player takes that shot. And what we saw in the Grand Canyon game was a lot of examples, probably more examples than any other game this season, of a few things. One, Texas's offensive system looking the closest to what it wants to look like all the time. Two, the confidence of guys shooting the basketball was at a rate, I think, over a course of a game higher than any other game this season. And I think that that's also a product of the kind of shots they were taking, when they were taking them, and the rhythm they were taking them. Three, and I think this is the most critical thing to determining whether Texas is going to be a good basketball team or not this season, the pace at which the basketball moved and where it moved and how it moved. It wasn't always perfect. It's you know, there are going to be times when Texas, there's a guard up there holding the ball, waving to a ball screen. And I know that drives the Texas coaching staff nuts, because I talked to Jace Febris and Elijah Mitru-Long today at a media session. And I was asking Jace about the ball movement and you know, getting into their actions. Because a lot of time I feel like we don't see a lot of Texas' depth to their offense and their actions, because it gets to about 14 on the shot clock and it's got a guard up there holding the ball and he's calling for a big guy to come to the screen and he's pointing to the floor. And Jace basically said, yeah, that drives our coaches nuts. And rightfully so. It's one thing to do that with 4 or 5 seconds left on the shot clock, but you still got half the clock remaining. You got to get into your offense and get into your actions. And the way Texas does that is by moving the basketball. And I think the Grand Canyon game was the best example of how critical it is for Texas on offense to move the basketball with pace and not to let the basketball stick. That's a word you hear a lot from college coaches and players. Don't let the ball stick. We've seen games this season when the ball really stuck. Radford especially. VCU to a little bit of a lesser extent, but still did too often. Although Texas did a better job driving into the paint that game than it did against Radford, when it just basically held the ball and then settled for perimeter jumpers because Radford was letting them shoot perimeter jumpers. The Grand Canyon game, you saw the ball move at the type of pace Texas wants it to on a consistent basis. And aha, look what happens. Texas shoots 53.3% from three-point range, 16 of 30 from beyond the arc, which is an incredible output there. 21 of 33 on two-point shots, 63.6%, another really good output. Made it to the line 11 times, shot 72.7%. There was a really free-flowing feel to that game. I'm not really surprised Texas didn't make it to the line a ton, because the way Grand Canyon was playing defense, you know, it wasn't going to foul him, and Texas really didn't have many opportunities to get to the free throw line, even when they drove the ball in the paint. Even when Texas did miss, it had 9 offensive rebounds, and that was 33.3% of its misses. That's a really solid percentage. Only 11 turnovers, and Texas assisted on 22 makes, which is 59.5% of their field goals made. Another really good figure. So this is what happens when Texas moves the basketball like that. And you can see there was a couple of really good moments early on. I remember one especially of Kamaka Hepa at the top of the key. He had an opportunity to shoot, which would have been a pretty good shot. Not a great shot, but a pretty good shot for him with his feet set. And instead of doing that, the moment he touched the ball, I swear, it didn't even stay in his hand for a second. He was already moving it to the wing. And bam, that guy is more wide open than Hepa was, is ready for the ball, grabs it, steps into a shot, donks it down. That's the kind of thing we saw a lot more of from Texas. And that's the kind of thing that Texas coaching staff and players have been talking about over and over again, is just moving the basketball. Sometimes offense is just as simple as doing things like that, where if you've got a system in place and you just move the basketball and don't let it stick, and you've got bodies moving, and the basketball's going from one side to the other, and then sometimes it's going from the top of the key down, or it's going from the wing inside, or if it's going from the wing across the court in a skip pass, or it's going from, you know, a pick and roll situation to a slip to a big guy on a roll, whatever. Just the pace at which the basketball moves, and that's what we saw a lot from Texas against Grand Canyon. I mean, even in the first half, it was clear that the ball was just moving at a rate that was going to lead to a lot of successful opportunities on offense. The ball was being skipped from the wing to the opposite corner. You had roll guys being hit, whether they slipped or they're just in a traditional pick and roll. You had pop guys being hit out of a pick and pop situation. When things broke down on the initial first set, you did see sometimes when there were some guards holding the ball and calling from a screen, but Texas did a better job of just continuing to move the basketball and getting into their other actions. That was what Texas wants to look like on offense. That is what Texas has often been talking about in terms of their system and what they believe in and what they've practiced and the spacing and all of those things. And for at least one night, it was on total display for basically the entire game, minus a few hiccups here or there. And I know some posters on Orange Buzz were, oh, Grand Canyon, you know, who the hell is that? Grand Canyon's not a terrible basketball team. And their calling card the last couple of years, 2 years when they won 22 games, last 3 years, so that Dan Majerle, coach of Grand Canyon, a former NBA player, Thunder Dan, great NBA player, multi-year All-Star. Grand Canyon the last few years, 27 wins, 22 wins, and 22 wins. And they've done it primarily with their defense. This was a team that was 90th in defensive efficiency 2 years ago and was 50th last year, including one of the best effective field goal percentage defenses in the country and the number one three-point percentage defense in the country last season. This isn't UTSA or you know, Delaware State or somebody like that rolling into Texas. It's a decent team. So it's not like the Longhorns were doing this against air. But that's the way Texas has to play in order to be successful on offense. That's the way Texas has to play in order to shoot the ball at a better rate. That's the way Texas has to play if it's going to have a chance to make some noise in the Big 12. And granted, there is going to be much tougher teams in the Big 12 than Grand Canyon. There are going to be times, starting with Kansas State. Heck, when Providence comes to Texas this week on Saturday, they like to blitz ball screens, blow those things up. They like to mix some defenses with some zone. They got a lot of length. They're aggressive. They'll present a challenge to Texas as well that will test if they can remain committed to doing what they did against the second half against Purdue and what they did the entire game against Grand Canyon, which is stay committed to their system and simply move the basketball. Don't let the basketball stick. Just move the basketball, make a decision, either attack into the paint, shoot the open three when you're ready or the open jumper, or move the basketball. And then move. And Texas has been using that dribble handoff set a lot more, which really forces players to move and get some movement going. Its design is to spread the floor. So if you can get to a quick pick and roll action, sometimes there's an easy bucket out of that. I know Matt Coleman hit Jackson Hayes for one of those, where it's just a beautiful job of baiting the defense into thinking he was just going to whip the ball back to the wing. But when Hayes dove to the rim, I mean, he just floated it over the top of the defender, easy bucket for Jackson Hayes. So that's what Texas has to do if they're going to have a chance, because their defense has been consistently solid. It's number 9 in adjusted defensive efficiency nationally. So their defense is going to be there. I don't think that we've had a game where you've watched Texas play defense, you're like, oh, God, that's bad. Even the North Carolina game when they gave up 89 points, most of that was Kobe White just going nuts and making some tough shots. The Purdue game, Carson Edwards' output, tip your hat. I went back and watched it again. Texas, besides the one time when Elijah Mitrualong late, of course, the only time Texas went to zone, he doesn't close out on Edwards nearly quick enough, and he bombs an open three from way out beyond the arc. But other than that, Texas did a good job, especially in the second half, of keeping him out of the paint and forcing him to take tough shots. So even when Texas has given up some points and some guys have had good performances, it's not like it's been terrible defense. The Longhorns have played good defense. I don't think that that's going to be an issue in Big 12 play, and give them credit for even those games when their offense has been a huge issue. They've still defended with a lot of urgency and a lot of execution on that end. It just comes down to the offense. And if you could tell me, hey, Texas is going to move the ball, just move the ball at the rate and the style they did against Grand Canyon on a majority basis throughout Big 12 play. Let's not say it's going to happen every game, because this is college basketball, young players. There are going to be games where it's just ugly at times and guys just aren't going to execute the way they're capable of. But if you could tell me if Texas is going to do that a majority of the time in the Big 12, I'd say that they could finish as high as third in the league. That's totally possible if they just move the ball, because they're not going to shoot what they shoot from beyond the arc. What did I say they shot? 53.3%. 53.3%. They're not going to do that every night. Heck, they might not do it again the rest of the year. But if they move the basketball at the pace and the way they moved it, with just this total trust in their teammates and the system in executing what they're asked to do, if they move the basketball like that from side to side, top to bottom, skip it, you know, throw it in on a back cut, just all of those things, they're going to shoot the ball better than they have in many games this year. Why? Because there's a big difference between taking open shots that are basically just handed to you by the defense that are out of rhythm, and taking shots that are in rhythm in the offense. You could see it in that Grand Canyon game. You've had guys, and there was a great replay of this, of one of Kerwin Roach's early threes against Grand Canyon. He's sitting in the corner, knees flexed, staring right at the ball. He's got his feet and toes pointed right towards the rim the way they need to be, and he's sitting there looking at the ball. He's fully focused. He's anticipating the pass coming to him, and he's got his hands up at his chest level as to say, hey, hit me right here. He gets a pass. He composes himself. He goes up, shoots it with great form, follows through, good landing, and it goes right in. There's a difference between taking that kind of shot in the flow of the offense that a player knows is coming, and that all of his teammates know that when he touches that ball, he's going to shoot it. Everybody knows, because it's in the flow of the offense. There's a big difference between taking that kind of shot and the shots that Texas was taking against Radford, where the ball was stagnant, there wasn't much movement, there wasn't much pace to the offense, and oh, there you go, a Pac-10 defense. Okay, I'm gonna raise up and shoot this. There's a difference. Yeah, some of those open shots that they took against Radford, some of those are bound to go in. Probably more often for better shooting teams in Texas. But a lot of those looks were technically open looks. But there's just a big difference between shooting shots in the flow and the rhythm of the offense and just shooting shots that are just to take them, basically. And then in your head saying, oh no, why didn't I make that? And then taking more and more. And it's just that snowball effect. Whereas the Grand Canyon game, you got a lot. Look at all the guys that hit threes. Elijah Mitrulong, 3 of 3. Matt Coleman, 2 of 3. Dylan Osikowski, 2 of 3. Jace Trebus, 4 of 10. Some of you might look at 10 attempts and say, well, that's too much. No way. The confidence of which he was shooting the basketball, let that dude fire away. Kerwin Roach, 2 of 3. Courtney Ramey, 2 of 4. Kamaka Hepa, 0 of 3. Drayton Whiteside, the walk-on, got in there and nailed a 3, and the bench reaction was awesome. Go find it on Twitter. If you haven't seen it already. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 regulars making at least 2 threes. And the 3 that Hepa shot, quality shots. And Shockham Smart basically said it. They have 7 guys on their team that shoot 3s. There's your 7. All 6 of them made 3s except for Hepa. And he said that before the Grand Canyon game, they showed each player, one individual clip of that player being shot ready, receiving a pass, shooting the ball the right way, and it going in. As to say, hey, this is what happens when you shoot it this way, and this is what happens when we run offense this way. Who knows if this is going to be some sort of, you know, collective aha moment, and Texas just does this on a more consistent basis? I don't know. they could go out against Providence and just have another stinker of an offensive game and then be in it, you know, in a 2-point game down the stretch. I'm not really sure. This has been a roller coaster of a Texas basketball team so far, but we now know that Grand Canyon type of game is in there. We saw it against North Carolina, not to that extent, but we saw it against the Citadel, saw it for the most part against Purdue, saw it in the first half against Michigan State, saw it for stretches against Arkansas. So we've seen it. The problem is, and I asked Shocker Smart this earlier this week, I said, do you feel like you guys are fully through whatever it is Radford and VCU was from an offensive standpoint? He said he wishes he could say that, but those are still too recent to say that. And he's absolutely right. They are. I mean, we're not even, what, the VCU game was December 5th. Like, it hasn't even been 2 weeks since that happened. So they're not completely out of the woods. And I think it'd be silly to expect Texas to all of a sudden be a great offensive team. But we are seeing some real signs of progress being made with what they're doing on offense. And I know that they've tweaked some things in terms of how they use their four men in transition to kind of spread the floor more. But really, it's the players on the floor understanding the value in trusting each other, trusting their system, and just moving the basketball. Just move the basketball. Just don't let the basketball stick. If you've got a chance to attack and get to the paint, attack it. If not, move the basketball. If you're catching it shot ready and it's in the flow of the offense, shoot the shot or move the basketball. It's really that simple. And then when you initially maybe don't have that great look right away, you're getting to your other actions with maybe some spread pick and roll. Maybe you're throwing it to a big guy. Maybe there's a back cut situation. We've seen some of that recently with shooters that are positioned in the corner running a back cut action to try to get an easy layup off of that. We've seen some different things that Texas can eventually get to. They're not some intricate, you know, grand motion scheme that's going to win all these coaching medals or whatever, but they can be effective if they're done the right way. And that's what Texas did against Grand Canyon, was doing those things the right way. So that, to me, if you ask me, hey, Dustin, one thing the rest of the year that determines that this Texas season is going to be one where they're not sweating it come tournament time and they can do some make some noise in the Big 12, or they're going to be a bubble team again this year, I'd say watch them play and watch the pace they move the basketball, especially in the half court. If the basketball moves with a lot of pace and not a lot of hesitation, and their guards are getting into the paint, they're gonna win games. They're gonna win, I don't know about a lot, depends on your definition of a lot, but they could win 10 or more games in the Big 12. They could. They're gonna play defense. When Matt Coleman and Kerwin Roach play at a good level, they're right up there with basically any guard in the Big 12. But when Texas doesn't move the basketball and you watch them and they're holding the ball and the ball's sticking and there's hesitation and there's a lack of confidence, they can lose anybody in the Big 12 on any night, home or road. That's really what it gets down to. So if you're a Texas fan, you have to be encouraged at least somewhat by what the response has been on offense with the game against Purdue and then the game against Grand Canyon. They need to stack a couple of more of those performances before they get into conference play. The Providence game is crucial, not just from a win-loss standpoint. They really need that for resume purposes to get into Big 12 play with 9 wins. And then let's say, you know, the SEC Big 12 Challenge, they play at Georgia. That's a winnable road game. Georgia's not very good this year. So let's say they get to Big 12 play with 9 wins, give them the Georgia win, that's 10. Basically, if you win 10 conference games, you're in the NCAA tournament with 20 before the conference tournament. Lose to Providence, the road gets tougher. Because if they beat Providence, that's another quality win, although it'd be at home, but that's still a quality win. It keeps them on schedule to not have to do, you know, not have to ask them to do something in the Big 12. That'd be really, really, really tough. And most importantly, They got to string together some wins and some performances like they had against Purdue and Grand Canyon. They've got to see the ball go through the net again in the way it did against Grand Canyon. Not the same percentages, because those aren't going to happen against Providence. It's just not. Providence is a better team. But to generate success in the same way that they did against Grand Canyon, by sharing the basketball, by being bought into the total team concept on offense, by not caring about really who takes the shot or how it's generated, just moving the ball, making the decision to either attack, shoot, or pass the ball. And it's really that simple. It is. Player movement, ball movement, make quality decisions to attack, to get in the paint, to score, to feed a teammate, or to shoot a shot-ready shot when you're open. And if not, move the basketball quickly. It's really what it boils down to. So that's what I'll be most focused on against Providence, although we'll see if Shaka Smart lets me in the gym after I missed the Grand Canyon game, and they scored 1.4 points per possession. 1.4. That is a crazy good number. Think about that for a second. That's almost 1.5 points every time down the floor. That's really, really, really good. And you look at some of their offensive numbers. They're 89th nationally in assists per field goals made. That's an improvement. They're 34th per three-pointers taken for field goal attempt. I think they probably want to lower that. But they did a better job of controlling the ball. They didn't issue any turnovers against Grand Canyon. They're 94th nationally in that. So there are some statistical signs. It just really gets down to, can they get to the free throw line a little more? Providence will be a game when they need to get to the free throw line more. Just the style of that game and the way that Providence plays, they'll need to get to the line more that game. But if they can improve their free throw rate, but really it just comes down to the efficiency of the offense. And it all gets back to moving the basketball, the pace at which the basketball moves. We should turn this podcast into a drinking game for those of you out there that like to indulge. Get your Pennsylvania Dutch eggnog handy. You'd be drunk by the time this podcast is done if you drank even just a little bit for every time I mentioned pace or moving the basketball on offense. That's really what it comes down to for Texas. It really is. I could talk to you about the defense, but we're 10 games in a season. It's been good. I think it's proven it's going to be good. Night in, night out. They've proven that they're going to play hard on defense. Now, their rebounding could be better. But I think it will be better, especially as Jackson Hayes plays more and maybe you get him and Sims on the floor at the same time. If Texas plays better offense, that affects its rebounding on defense. You don't want to hear about the defense, though. It's the offense. That's going to determine everything. And if you start playing the Dustin dropping dimes drinking game, hey, that's Dustin dropping dimes drinking game. How about that? If you want to play that game, for every time I mention pace or move the ball on offense, you know, make sure you have an Uber home. If you're not home already, if you're listening in the car, don't be drinking and driving on the way to work or from work or to see grandma for Christmas or whatever. That's really what it boils down to. It's basically that simple. Is how Texas moves the basketball. Because you could see it on guys' faces too. The way they take shots, the way they interact with their teammates. I remember one time Matt Coleman got a nice feed for a corner three and Curran Roach put up, you know, three fingers and was going back down the floor when he shot it. Like, we haven't seen much of that from Texas this year. That kind of player interaction. Not to say that the chemistry is bad. I mean, you know, Texas talked up its chemistry before the season. You know, sources said the same to me. They said, you know, this is the best chemistry that Texas had since Shock has been there. But there was also this underlying frustration a lot of times in these poor offensive performances, and it just affected everybody. It was such a negative energy. You could see it, Kerwin Roach especially. But what you're seeing now is a group of guys that are starting to really trust. Hey, if we do this and we trust each other, we're capable of doing this kind of thing. And some of you might be rolling your eyes, oh, you're making too big a deal out of the Grand Canyon performance. Well, go watch the tape. That's what it is. And we've seen this against North Carolina. We saw it in the first half against Michigan State. We saw it a lot against Purdue. We saw it in parts of other games. We just haven't seen it as good as we saw it against Grand Canyon over the course of an entire game. And I guarantee you the Providence game, it won't look as good as that. It just won't, because of Providence. Providence will have a lot of say in that. But if Texas stays committed to moving the basketball, it should generate enough points to win that game. It really should. We'll find out Friday night. By the way, whoever scheduled all these Friday night games is killing me. Friday at 8 p.m., man. You get home at like 1 a.m. after that one. So, but that does it for this week's edition of the Dropping Diamonds podcast. I've rambled again for basically the entire podcast about the Texas offense. But really, that's the topic this season. That'll be the topic after the Providence game. That'll probably be the topic in Big 12 play. That'll probably be the topic at the end of the season. Is can Texas play the offense it needs to play in order to win a lot of basketball games, especially against good teams? We're about to find out. We saw against Grand Canyon, they're capable of playing at a really, really, really high rate. We'll find out over the next few games if they're capable of doing that on a semi-consistent basis. And if they are, it could be a really good season for them. If they keep putting us on the roller coaster and with a break here or there to go barf in the corner, might be hard to find 20 wins this season. But that's really what it comes down to, is the offense. So thank you for listening to the Dropping Diamonds podcast on the yak.com. Again, I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com. Get to orangebloods.com for all your Texas basketball coverage. Get to the yak.com/Austin for all the great podcast content. It's National Signing Day tomorrow for football, the first National Signing Day, a big one. So make sure you're getting over to the Jason Sukumel's recruiting podcasts, or even the ones before his most recent one. I mean, you can go back and get a lot of quality information over the course of multiple podcasts. Jeff Ketchum did a recruiting podcast recently. Anwar Richardson's got his Drunk Uncle going, which is people love that one. It's very, very entertaining. I like the style that Anwar does that podcast. Alex Dunlap has got his podcast. We've got tech podcasts. We've got hip hop podcasts. I'm going to be adding more podcasts soon. You're going to have podcasts coming out your ears, which is really important in times when you've been around the family a ton. Maybe you get some of those fancy new Apple earbud, whatever, Bluetooth headphones, whatever, the wireless deal. You can kind of just stick those in there and flip on a podcast, sip some eggnog, and go to your happy place. We're here for you. That's what we aim to do, is to entertain and make time go by a little bit quicker when you need it to. So until then, we'll have a full breakdown of the Providence game on next week's edition of the Dropping Dimes podcast. Hopefully for Texas' sake, we're saying, hey, they did it again. They moved the basketball. They got another needed win, like a solid win, as they round out non-conference play. Hopefully I'm not getting on here and saying, hey, are you ready to drink, when I mention how Texas did not share the basketball. And if you guys are, if I don't talk to you again before your next podcast listen, have a merry, merry Christmas. Be safe. Spend some time with some friends and family. Spread the holiday joy. Put a little pep in your step. Get some Pennsylvania Dutch eggnog. Highly recommend St. Arnold Christmas Ale. And have a good time. Enjoy the holidays. And thank you for listening to the Dropping Diamonds podcast on theyak.com.